Meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Some weeks when I look at the text that I'm planning to preach on, usually on Tuesday morning, and I start reflecting on what it's saying, the words are clear, and I go through the week and it's clarified further, and it seems fairly straightforward. But then there are other weeks when the passage feels uncomfortable. And as the week progresses, it just gets more uncomfortable. And that's been what it's like this past week. The Pharisee standing at a distance, praying a gratitude prayer that he is not like those others who he looks down on. And the more I sit with him, the more I see myself. As you may know, this weekend has been the local dance studio's recital where Reuben and Amelia dance and Amelia teaches. Dance shows are notorious in bringing out both the best and the worst in parents. Just watch the TV show Dance Mums. Being involved in the show has meant a lot of extra hours, which means I've been more tired than usual, which for my personality leads to quicker judgment. And when I watch parents acting in some pretty crazy ways, it's very easy to judge and to say to myself, thank God I am not like that. And I'm pretty sure you can all think for a bit and come up with those in your life who you are really glad that you are not like. It seems that with the best motives, we can still so easily slip into the Pharisee's shoes of today's parable, being thankful that we are not like them. Take a moment and plant the parable into your today. Who might be the Pharisee and who might be the tax collector? Think about it for a bit. You see, evidently, going to church can be quite a tricky business. One person might enter this place thinking, I feel good here. I'm doing okay, God. Thank you that I haven't fallen into temptation like some others I know. Bless me that I may keep up the good work. And another person might slip into this place thinking, I've got no right to be here, God. I've really screwed up and I've made a mess of my life. If you can, God, have pity on me. According to Jesus, the first person could leave this church at odds with God, while the second one might leave very much okay with God. Jesus just keeps on upsetting our ideas of what is appropriate or inappropriate, fair or unfair. It is typical Jesus. Remember that the tax collector is the classic villain of the time. It's the witch in the fairy tale, the traitor who was in with the Romans, made plenty of money from those who could least afford it. And the Pharisee is the goody, trying desperately to do the right thing. While good Jews fasted once a year, this guy would fast twice a week. While good Jews gave a tenth of their income, this guy gives a tenth of everything he buys, just in case the shopkeeper doesn't tithe. He is so generous. So why does Jesus turn it upside down? How does the goody get it so wrong, and how does the villain get it so right? The first clue is when we read that the Pharisee is described as praying with or to himself, which scholars argue is a more correct translation of the Greek. That's an unusual description of prayer, talking with himself or talking to himself or praying only in respect of himself. The King James Version reads, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. So this prayer appears to be more an airing of his goodness before God than a conversation with God. He is flaunting his virtues rather than revealing a relationship. He starts with self-justification. He compares himself with others that he regards as lesser. He seeks his own security by belittling others. And we've all seen it before. The person who, instead of simply being secure in themselves, needs to put others down in order to feel better about themselves. But there we go again, with the Pharisee saying how glad we are that we're not like that. It is such a powerful text, Because the very moment we dare to say that that's not me, we fall into the trap of it being us. We start to say, I'm so glad I'm not like that Pharisee who prays like that. And that is why grace is so vitally important. Because we can't earn our place with God. It is gift. And when we get that sorted in our heads and hearts, we no longer have to be striving to be better than. We can simply work at being our best selves in response to such amazing grace. Wherever we have come from, we are no more and no less deserving of being here with God. The tax collector knew the bottom line, that he could not earn his way into favour with God. Grace was what he absolutely needed. Grace is what we all absolutely need. But when we get caught up in self-justification, we deny ourselves room for grace. We can live the most moral life, but the neatly contained self-justification leaves no space for grace. It has nothing to do with God holding back, but all to do with our willingness to let go enough to receive. So what is it that brings us to the place of receiving grace? I believe this too is found in the way the Pharisee prayed. It's a prayer that lacks humility. And it's humility that brings us to receive grace. For when we choose the way of humility, we choose the way of less judgment. Humility requires us to take the focus off ourselves. And the simplest way to do that is to turn the focus onto God. It is in prayer that we show most clearly who we are. In prayer that we are called to be open to self-satisfaction. Thomas Merton, an American Cistercian monk, writer, theologian, mystic, poet, who died in 1968, said, Christian humility is first of all a matter of supernatural common sense. It teaches us to take ourselves as we are, instead of pretending, as pride would have us imagine, that we are something better than we are. If we really know ourselves, we quietly take our proper place in the order designed by God. Pride makes us artificial, and humility makes us real. He goes on to say that humility dares to be ordinary, whereas pride always longs to be unusual. Pride makes us artificial, humility makes us real. Pride longs to be unusual, humility dares to be ordinary. Pride separates us from God. Humility draws us close. Humility unites us with all humanity, all of us who wander in the world of shadows, mistaking the outward appearance of people and things for reality, reaching out beyond the shadows to face the reality and ask for mercy. The issues of pride and humility affect us all. I wonder how you would describe humility. How would you explain it? Because it is such a common issue. It's a topic that's been often written about. So I want to take some time now to let you reflect on some quotes with regard to humility. There is quotes inside your order of service. There's a little strip that's inside. I invite you to pull yours out, have a read of your quote, and have a think. Talk to your neighbour if you want. You're going to have a few minutes. Think about what the quote is saying. Have a go at putting it in your own words. Think about whether you think it's true, true in general, true for you. And finally, think about what it might be saying to you. And after we've had a bit of time, I'm going to ask that we all read out the quote so we get to hear the other ones as well. So take a few minutes to reflect on the quote that's in your order of service.